Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Well, we often talk about change on this show. No kidding, the title of the show. It goes from a variety of angles and a variety of mediums that make change happen. So never underestimate the power of a book and what spurs it to come from there. It's a pleasure to have Roxana Robinson with us this morning. Good morning, Roxana.
Good morning.
It's a real pleasure. Let me introduce Roxana. Her newest book is Sparta. It's actually her ninth. It's a story of a Marine who returns to be actually quite estranged from the multiple worlds that he knew. He's kind of caught between an exit and an entrance of his very being, as well as the loss and recovery in relationships with his family, his friends, and his girlfriend. Roxana is the author of 3 short story collections, 5 novels, and the biography of Georgia O'Keeffe. With 4 New York Times bestselling notables, she has written for The New Yorker, The Atlantic, The Harper's, Tim House, Best American Short Stories, and elsewhere. She's a native of Kentucky, growing up in Pennsylvania, and Roxana attended Bennington College and the University of Michigan. She's received fellowships from the Guggenheim Foundation, the National Endowments of the Arts, and, as of course, right now, she's president of the Authors Guild, quite a distinction. Sparta has won the James Webb Award for Distinguished Fiction from the U.S. Marine Corps Heritage Trust just recently. It's also won the Maine Writers and Publisher Award for Fiction, and Roxana has been invited to be the distinguished speaker at the U.S. Air Force Academy this fall. The reaction and support, quite frankly, from the military community for the riveting messages of this novel for change through fiction abounds, particularly, as she would say, she's a complete outsider of this world, being a woman and a civilian. So, Roxana, how is it you came to decide to even broach this subject, this topic, fictionally, and then the swirl that has now brought you into the forefront with it?
Well, it was a very interesting journey for me. I write novels that about subjects that just take hold of me, and I didn't plan to write this. I really didn't think I was somebody who sort of was entitled to write it, but I read an article in the New York Times probably 6 or 7 years ago, and it was the first I had seen about something that became common knowledge later, but learning that we had sent people, our troops, over there in unarmored Humvees, and that they were sent out on patrol until they were blown up, and then the military was reluctant to diagnose brain injuries because it was expensive to treat them, and because it meant removing combatants from the field. That configuration of facts was so troubling to me that I started reading everything I could find about just what it was like to be there, what it was like to get into the Humvee in the early morning, and what it sounded like driving through the streets, and what it felt like to be in an explosion. And after I had become further and further engaged, I just realized it was taking me over, and I was going to write about it.
And had you, the other novels that you've written, was that a similar journey of you finding yourself wrapped around with material that kind of pulled you forward, or was this even a unique experience for this particular novel?
With each novel, I get engaged by some kind of problem, something that I find troubling and demanding, and that sort of won't let me go. And so with Cost, I was actually writing, I thought I was writing about a different family dynamic, about what it feels like within 3 generations to have the oldest generation, the older parents, start to fail, and how that impacts everybody else in the family. But it turned out one of the children was a heroin addict, and so that also took an even larger toll on the family. So it just grew. These things are hard to describe, but it's I don't know. It's like getting slowly into a river, and then you're taken up in the current, and You can swim, you can move around in the current, but you can't really control it.
So that's indeed the journey then that unfolds as you write your fiction then. The character of Conrad Farrell, was indeed that he the launch then of the journey to write the book Sparta?
He sort of presented himself to me, and I was interested to learn one of the pieces of information that I learned was that there were, I didn't really know who it was that was volunteering to go into the military now that the draft had been stopped. And I was under the impression that a lot of people went in as a career move, and it was a good way to lead your life. But I learned that after 9/11 particularly, many, many of the people who volunteered went in for reasons purely of idealism, of wanting to serve the country, wanting to serve a larger mission, wanting to make the world a better place. And I was really interested by that.
Yes, I've mentioned on the air here that I have a brother who indeed a younger brother, that he continues to serve in the pursuit of democracy in war-torn parts of the world, not as a member of the U.S. military, but a civilian in international security. And that's exactly right. He's driven from the inside to go make a difference. Your character, Conrad Farrell, his roots actually come from his longtime study of the classics.
Yes, and that was another thing that I found really interesting, particularly in the Marines, there is a long connection to the classical world, and not every Marine feels this, but as I was corrected by one Marine who came to a reading, but there is a connection between Marine history and the world of Sparta and the ancient world, and there are a lot of intellectuals in the Marines, and there are a lot of people who draw on that ancient world, which celebrates the heroism of the warrior, and it's a very powerful way to look at war. It's both seductive and terrifying, because celebrating the warrior's great strengths also means focusing on them instead of the strengths of a person that makes peacetime great.
Yeah, that's right. You mentioned the reaction of a Marine member of the Marines when you did a reading. Would you care to do one for us right now, perhaps a section out of your book that would illustrate both your writing style and the content that we're speaking of?
All right. This is from the very beginning. Conrad is on a plane coming home from his final deployment, and he's about to land in Bangor, Maine. The airport runways and buildings stretched out below them, straight axial lines like a mechanical drawing. The plane dropped rapidly, and the long, flat buildings, the dark tarmac, rose up alarmingly to meet it. The engines became louder, the pitch ascending toward some unbearable climax. The plane fell sickeningly toward the earth. There was a pounding inside his skull. He could feel it coming the moment in which you heard the sound. It was before anything had hit, when the air was full of ozone. The moment in which you understood that something was happening, but not yet what. It was the moment that you knew in your body before you knew in your mind. The moment when you felt the sound, like a great silence, taking you over, the shock wave rolling through your body, your heart, your lungs, time stopping around you, everything flying apart into fragments. That limitless, radiant moment, glittering behind your eyelids, before you knew.
Wow. You know, one will read the reviews. We're speaking, by the way, to Roxana Robinson, and her latest book is Sparta. You can learn more about her work at RoxanaRobinson.com. You know, you're getting a lot of national acclaim for, obviously, what we just heard, the literature and that nature of the work, but also the fearlessness of the story. Where do you think that whole place that really fiction actually is a function that can be an explosive device in many regard and inspire people to take action?
I think fiction is a great, great engine for change and engine for understanding. And one of the things that interested me was hearing one question that I asked all the vets that I interviewed was, what's your favorite war book? And a lot of them said All Quiet on the Western Front, which is a famous war book and actually a famous anti-war book. War and Peace is an anti-war book. So what was interesting is this complicated tangle of responses that we feel. There is a great surge of admiration for bravery and honor and loyalty, and at the same time there's a sickening sense of what war does to you and how damaging it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can...
And I think that's what happened. That's what great war books deliver, is both of those sides.
Well, for any of us that, of course, have lived through our own personal wrestling with and the changes since 9/11, and also memory of the various stages that led into, during, and post the major uprising within the Iraqi conflict, I also felt when I was reading your book, I was suddenly remembering parts of history that actually were very contemporary in my lifetime, but that maybe I had blocked out.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the other telling thing that made me read your book with such energy, but also with a hesitation, is to face down some of my own denial, perhaps, or not paying attention to, or taking a stand on.
Are you talking about Vietnam, or are you talking about the actual Iraq War?
The actual Iraq War.
Yeah.
You know, because your book, and you mentioned it earlier that Roxana does not do her books without a significant amount of research, that the countless number of Marines you interviewed with, and that they were even giving you private access to so much sensitive information that you then could turn it into something so relevant with what you otherwise were observing in the national media.
It was very, very important to hear their individual stories and the way they responded to things. And of course, any war is huge, so there will be many, many different responses to things. But, you know, some veterans, while they were over there, deliberately did not read the news, did not try to find out what political responses were, didn't want to know if what they were doing had been revealed to be unnecessary. They didn't want to know about the weapons of mass destruction because there was nothing they could do about it. They're there. They had to obey orders. So that was a place they simply couldn't bring themselves to go. And there were other people who felt the mission was important and they believed in it, and nothing would change that. Mm-hmm. So it was incredibly powerful for me to hear all of those different voices and to see how each person resolved that question.
And for our veterans, of course, returning to the United States afterwards, of course, this is very different than veterans that would have returned after World War II. That was a war that the country was behind. In this situation, that wasn't the case, has not been the case, such that then they're assimilating back into what might be, quote, normal society. Therein lies tremendous amount of, as you say in your book, the estrangement or the isolation.
Yeah, and it comes from a lot of things. I mean, for one thing, the American public really didn't feel engaged by the war. Nobody understood why we were there. It's still hard to figure out exactly why we went. And then the soldiers themselves, the veterans themselves, it was a very difficult war to fight. Not that any war is easy, but this was a war in which there were very few fixed engagements, very few times when the enemy was wearing a uniform and presented itself as an enemy. So much of the time they were being blown up without anybody there to claim as their enemy. The enemy was hiding in crowds. And that was terrifying and frustrating for them. And so morality starts to break down. So there were a lot of... Mm-hmm. There were a lot of things that happened in Iraq that people came back and found they couldn't live with. So we're seeing a very high rate of suicide after this war because the war itself didn't have a strong moral base, unlike World War II, when we may not have wanted to go there, but we knew what was happening. We understood what the threat was. We understood that our allies were being attacked, and we had to stand up for them. In Iraq, it was very different, and that makes it incredibly hard to reengage in a civilian society.
We're speaking with Roxana Robinson again. Her book is Sparta. Roxana, the fact that your book, how timely could it be with what's also been revealed here in our country right now with the concerns of the ability of the Veterans Administration hospitals to deliver care to our veterans, but obviously within your book, Conrad comes to recognize in time that he's the victim of PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, and how he possibly could get the kind of help that he needs.
That's another large problem, mm-hmm. because so many veterans, I mean, when you're in the military, the first rule is don't complain. Don't say this is hard on you. Don't say you can't make it up this hill. Don't say you can't carry your weapon. It's too heavy in your backpack. So they come home and there's still sort of that command is still echoing in their minds. Mm-hmm. Don't complain. Right. Don't suck it up. So on the one hand, they don't want to admit that they can't carry this burden. And on the other hand, for many reasons, they tend to go to the VA system because they are already in that system, because it's set up for them, because they can't get insurance on the outside, or they think they can't. And they don't want to reveal mm-hmm. to a civilian what's in their minds. I mean, many times what's going on in their minds is something that a civilian would not be able to handle, would not be able to deal with. And it shouldn't be the veteran's responsibility to take care of a therapist if he's trying to tell mm-hmm. him something has happened. So they feel trapped, plus which the VA, as I learned doing interviews, is enormously overburdened. It's much too large and underfunded to function in a reliable, timely manner. So they were trapped by that as well. Even when they decided they wanted to go somewhere, I was told routinely it was always a 3-month wait. Any time you wanted to make an appointment, it was going to be 3 months. And often the appointment was brusque and short, and people were not paying attention. And it's not because the VA is run by villains. It's because it's underfunded and there isn't enough staff.
Mm-hmm. It takes up. So one can see, again, the opportunity for friction, your story, Conrad's story, to wake up opportunities for us to change our mindset and where we could all help one another. Roxana, the fact that your book has been receiving such wonderful acclaim by the Marine Corps, when you first got that call, that must have been, oh, my, where did this come from or how did this happen?
I was very surprised and very honored. And I went down to a ceremony that was conducted by a lot of Marine generals. It was mm-hmm. very exciting. So I felt very, very honored to be taken in by a group that is famously careful about who they welcome.
Sure, absolutely. But you're an outsider on the inside. And Roxana, of course, this upcoming opportunity to be a distinguished speaker at the U.S. Air Force Academy, I mean, there to get your literature and your thoughts and your experiences in front of up-and-coming leaders, a very powerful opportunity for you, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to think of the words to use here.
So, Roxana, every single one of your projects and your books, as we mentioned, this was your ninth. Have you been swept off your feet yet by another quest, another world to explore, another character to pull you forward in a new direction yet?
Yes, I have.
So you're kind of riding two bicycles or two motorcycles or two sports cars at the same time.
Yes, and I don't actually talk about my projects while I'm working on them because it's sort of it's not a good idea. It allows some kind of alien energy into
okay.
it. It has to stay isolated, but it is exciting, and it's also another world I knew nothing about, so off I go again.
So rats, she said it's a secret, in other words, to us listeners. So that just tells me we're going to have to keep track of you as we go forward. Roxana, you and I, of course, had the opportunity to meet courtesy of the Tucson Festival of Books on a panel and to watch you interact with a couple of your colleagues that are writing about totally different topics, but yet the common thread of love and loss and the like. Talk to us about just your personal development as you use those venues like book festivals and panels with colleagues, or your role at the Authors Guild, to keep you always on point and have you help others along that way too.
The great benefit of doing readings or going to someplace like the Tucson Festival is that you get to interact with readers, and there are people who you wouldn't meet otherwise. I mean, writers lead very solitary lives, and so going to a book festival is huge. It's a big deal. And I really, really enjoy the vets who come up and talk to me, and they add immeasurably to each occasion. So that's really that's what I look forward to the most with this book is hearing from vets. And with the Authors Guild, there are a lot of issues that are going on right now, so that's been very lively, and that definitely keeps me on my toes.
Well, and in fact, if you look at the whole world of you authors, particularly yourself, and this has been your profession for such a long time, just the entire book world, if we even call them books anymore, now they're electronic medium as well, has so dramatically changed. So, but nonetheless, for those of you who are the provider of the content, to stay right there in your zone at the same time?
It's a big question right now, this face-off between Amazon and Hachette. And they're battling over terms of distribution. And it's the writers who are getting the worst of it. And it's interesting because Amazon is a distributor and the publishing houses are publishers. But the really essential component in this is of publishing is the authors.
Right.
They are the one thing that you can't do without for publishing. So what we're doing at the Authors Guild is supporting the writers and urging Amazon to stop putting so much pressure on the publishers and urging the publishers to be more generous with their ebook royalties. But Amazon is not a place that is friendly to writers at this point. And so anybody who chooses other venues to buy their books from is doing a service to the publishing world.
There you go. Interesting perspective, which, of course, those of us who just, you know, hit that little button on our mobile phones or on our computer to get the book to show up by FedEx aren't mindful of as well, that landscape that, you know, embeds additional change. Well, Roxana, I know your book, Sparta, took place in a place that you lived for many, many years. Very familiar road system. In fact, I used to live in that same vicinity as you and I spoke about. The idea of selecting and placing it there, I suspect, really brought the character and the move all the more to life for you inside your own head.
Yeah, for me, it's very, very important. Place is very important. I have to know what a place looks like. I have to understand the neighborhood and the culture of it. And because usually I don't choose a place that exists. That's really a place that I have lived in. But in this case, because Conrad was going to be so different from me, different generation, different gender, and a completely different worldview, I wanted to ground him in a place that I knew extremely well so that I could, that was another way that I could get close to him and connect mm-hmm. with him. And it was a house that I lived in for a long time, and then we sold. And so this was kind of my farewell to that place, which I loved very much, and I loved living there. So this was sort of a farewell Valentine.
Yes, and that will be following you now every time you speak and do a reading, of course, at the same time. Yeah. Well, Roxana Robinson, thank you so very much again for our listeners. It's Roxana Robinson.com. Her latest book is Sparta. She won't tell us yet what her new project is because we don't want to jinx it, but I guarantee it's going to be one for us to watch for. But in the meantime, wish you all the best and the energy that is now surrounding this very important topic of supporting our U.S. military that are returning home after very difficult challenges. Thank you for your service in that space.
Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. Have a great day. Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.